Hey, welcome back to another HVAC Success Secrets Revealed with Thaddeus and Evan. Today, we've got on none other than America's service sales coach from Service MVP, Joe Crisera. Over 47 years in the industry, he's been around the home services space. So much knowledge that he dropped on today's episode. Thad, what was your favorite part?
It happened, and it was actually one of the questions that one of our guests had asked while watching the show. And we've talked a lot about it, and a lot of people talk about it, and a lot of people wonder, should I put my prices online? How can I have transparency? How can I still be congruent to my sales process when I put them on there? And there was one thing that, and I really like the way that Joe framed it on how to do it the right way so you don't give everything away and don't mess it up in the long run. So that was a great topic. Joe, how about yourself? What was your favorite takeaway nugget from today?
Yeah, I like when somebody asked me how big you have to be to start a call-by-call management system. And I really like the fact that we started this meeting with technology and how technology can help us leverage even a small startup company with one owner or one leader and another service tech. If you have as few as two people, you got the first startup of your first performance team. And how we talked about how the even bigger companies like Peterman Services just start with one salesperson with one service people and a service person, and they put that together and created a whole army of people to do that.
That was a great part of the episode. I really loved that one. I also really loved when you shared your buying experience, since you are shopping for an HVAC system right now, and the incompetence of the technicians and the sales guys that came out to see you. I could not believe it. And the one point you made about how most guys are probably overestimating what it is that their competition is doing in the marketplace and how you can truly stand out. I love that part. And at the very end, you answered the question of how much profit should we as a business be pre-planning for net profit? And I love that part as well. So you got to stay on to the end so you can grab that nugget as well. But we want to hear from you. Leave it down in the comments. What was your favorite nugget from this episode? Enjoy the show. Hey, welcome back to another HVAC Success Secrets Revealed. We have good conversations with good people. And any good conversation is worth having drunk. Cheers, my friend.
Cheers.
Today, we have none other than the lead bass player from Rapid Transit, straight out of Chicago. He is the service sales coach. He's America's service sales coach and also the founder of Service MVP, none other than Uncle Joe, Joe Crisera. We've had him on twice before. And I'm excited for this conversation because this was actually originally sparked from a post that was put out back in January. And we tried to get him scheduled right away, but we had a whole bunch of guests already pre-scheduled and then a scheduling conflict. And so we are now finally getting him in, and I'm excited for this.
Yeah, no, I was thinking that it was going to be our second conversation, and I forgot I wasn't on the first one because I remember the first one because I missed it because we had the birth of my firstborn. But great to have another conversation with Joe, seeing what he's able to do within the industry and just help people out is phenomenal. And some of the stuff that he's got on the go, been in it for a hot minute and brings a lot of wealth. So I'm excited to get into the topic that he posted in our group too. I think that's going to be a fun one.
Absolutely. Well, and we've had a lot of guests on recently that have talked about his training, both on the front end with the CSRs, as well as on the back end with sales and what a difference it's made for their organizations. So fun to actually get the man behind the vision on the show today. So I'm excited for that.
All right.
But the show wouldn't be possible without our sponsors, of course. So a quick readout for all of them. We've got Chirp, Profit Rocket, and of course, On Purpose Media. We'll start with Chirp.
All right. Did you know that Dave signed up with Chirp and in his first months, he added 42K in revenue to his business just with Chirp? Yep. 42K in the first month just with Chirp. Cassie signed up and added 80K in revenue in just 14 days with Chirp. So you want to do that too to your business? Guess what? Go ahead, click this link or go to chirp.com/HSSR, learn more about it. And also, guess what? With that link, you get 25% off your first 3 months. Check them out.
There you go. And of course, we've got callprofitrocket.com. Profit Rocket. Look, if you want to learn what Victor did to grow his business from zero to 40 million in the last 4 years, go check out the business blueprint where he lays out everything from call scripts to SOPs to how to read your financial statements. It's all in there. He's got some excellent guests that are contributing to that as well. So go check out the business blueprint at callprofitrocket.com. And of course, they've got their events coming up as well. They've got a couple regional events where they're doing some sales training, and they've got the big growth summit that's happening in Austin, Texas in September. And the one and only Joe Crisera is going to be there. Always going to be fun to have him around and on stage and speaking in front of the audience. So I'm excited for that event because we will be there podcasting too.
Shit yeah, bud. Let's go.
Five, four, three, two, one.
Welcome to HVAC Success Secrets Revealed, a show where we interview industry leaders and disruptors, revealing the success secrets to create and unleash the ultimate HVAC business. Now your hosts, Thaddeus and Evan.
Uncle Joe, it's not every day we get a rock legend on the show, so thank you so much for joining us again today.
Oh, those are days gone by, but definitely thank you for recognizing that. A little birdie whispered in your ear and mentioned my past musical feats. I was 15 years in a band, and I played in a lot of different bands. I used to play the rock circuit in a central part of the United States, and I played things like Rush and Cheap Trick and all that kind of stuff. So it was a classic rock band, and definitely, although it's not classic rock here, it's definitely classic podcast with both Thaddeus and Evan, thank you guys both for making the effort. And Thaddeus, let me just say, welcome back from your break from alcohol. And I'm glad to see that you've discovered that the dependency is not dependent and you can make it for 90 days. Congratulations on that. And
thank you.
Welcome back anyway. Just to have
thank you. We were chatting a little bit about that before. And we had Corey Barrier on. We talked about it. Why are you taking a break? I had an unhealthy relationship with it for 5-6 weeks to start the new year. And I'm just like, you know what? I need a clean break from it just to be able to reassess. But here's the thing that's funny that I mentioned to you is that in that 90 days, there really weren't many times I'm like, I really want to drink. But when I noted that would like to have a drink. Okay. What was the trigger behind that? And it's like, okay, that was a really tough day. I'm going to have a drink. Now, are you just masking something where you could do something else to be able to help mitigate whatever might be happening? So that was kind of an interesting discovery because I've done lots of 30-day challenges, as I mentioned, some successful, most not. But this one was different because it was a focused 90 days to be able to do it. So here we are.
Definitely an exercise in self-awareness. And that's really, it's amazing. Thank you. And thanks for inviting me back here, guys. Definitely every time I come back or last time I saw you guys at the Profit Rocket event in Vegas. And I look forward to seeing you again in Austin. And it was like one brother, I think at the time from another mother I met at the time. And definitely, I can't wait to see you guys both there in Austin if we can get together with the big crowd and have some fun.
Absolutely. It'll be a good time. For those that don't know you, do you want to give a quick 30-second summary of Service MVP and what it is that you do there, just in case someone hasn't heard you before?
At Service MVP, we have got a great team of people. We have 28 employees we have our Service MVP app now, which allows people to give onboard and orient your employees to graduate from our training courses. Our total immersion training course in the first week averages about a 78% increase in revenue. And after 4 weeks of that advanced training course we have, it's a 292% increase in sales. And then we have a bunch of mastery courses there as well. And we also do coaching and we also do accountability where we basically test and train people. So you don't just teach people, we test and train them, which is really the difference that makes us special, which is the gift of accountability, which I really believe in it.
Absolutely. And you've lived this industry for a very long time. You've been around it for, 40 years now?
47 years.
47 years now. So it's not something that's new to you. You've lived it and breathed it for a very long time and now train in it as well. So it's fantastic. And John Gonzalez shared these wonderful words. So we'll make sure we throw those up here as well. That Uncle Joe is a great man that instills confidence in those that cross his paths with and coaches. One of the top humans that has impacted our industry for sure. 100% agree with that.
I'm melting. Don't stop. What's in my eye?
Oh, jeez.
Pollen. Yeah. It's allergies.
So the question that sparked this conversation was in our Facebook group. You posted it January 1st, and I've got it pulled up here. So it was a long time ago, but you had asked, predict the future. 100 years from now, what will change between now and 2123? And I pushed back on that, and I challenged it a little bit because it's really difficult to predict the future in terms of technology and the massive changes that we're seeing already with AI. What home living is going to be like in 100 years, really hard to predict. Mm-hmm. I'm more curious on what it is that you think will not change in the next 100 years, which you listed off a bunch of things around housing and work and education and medical, travel, marriage, family life, religion, things like that. But in terms of running a business, what things do you think will not change in the next 100 years?
I think things that will not change, that's a good question. I think when it comes to the in-home service business, I do believe that the things that will not change is the human touch, or the whether it's done by technology and making humans smarter to be more emotionally intelligent, I would say. There's going to be many more tools that'll help the average technician who currently has challenges with getting to know people on an emotional level, more on getting to know the family and make those friends. There'll be more information, and it'll be easier to create that emotional impact. But it's just like you said, how many times have we done the thing where we search for something on our phones, and next all the ads come up for that thing we search for? I remember somebody told me that they were just talking about something with their phone in the room, and all of a sudden all the ads turned into something they were just talking about. So the thing's listening to us, right? So I think that's going to reverse order. And I think we're going to hear a lot of that kind of thing where I can imagine a day where our devices and stuff will listen to conversations that we will be having with customers, whether it's on the phone or whether it's the chat or whether it's in real life, and be able to provide the emotional intelligence that was so sorely needed to contribute to the life of our clients. Make sure they realize they're not just getting somebody who is a worker, but they get somebody who cares about their family too. Does that make sense? So I think that's one of the things that's going to be developed, and I'm excited about it. Truthfully, it's going to make service better. It's going to make more valuable, make all of us more valuable. If we look at the good part of it, that's what I would say the good part of it is. That I choose to only look at the good things, because the bad things, we'll have to just pivot on that and rise above those things, as always. But that's kind of what I think. I really think that the average person will be, just like the average technician, is much better now at the technical because of companies like BlueOn and other technologies, which make a normal technician just somebody who's got all these resources behind them to figure out a problem. Before, you were just stuck on a call by yourself. Now you got like not only your own boss and your own team, but you got thousands of other resources on Facebook. You can go on a Facebook group, you could go on BlueOn, and you can find answers for technical. I think the same thing is going to happen for us to be able to connect with clients, to learn about our clients better. I think the technology will learn. We'll be able to search social media channels and get to know the code of the family to present more of a personal, customized solution, and also to share about how the problems will be impacting people in a more personalized, customized way. So I think customization and personalization, I think, will definitely be a thing, because I think what I'm seeing about AI is that it's really now getting the point where it can actually reason and think beyond just regurgitating facts. It can actually get to the point where it actually can learn and reason in a human way. I think that's something that, if I had to trust humans to do that more than technology, I probably would say the technology would be better at that in the long run than we're going to be. Make sense?
Yeah, no, 100%. I'm actually glad you mentioned that, because I'd actually written that down, the AI part of things. And you talked about the human touch and emotional intelligence, and also with everything moving towards AI and being able to build those things. You look at ChatGPT and the input prompts that you can give it and the outputs that you give it. Obviously, you got to have the input prompts in order to be able to get the right output, but also widgets and connecting to the web. When you look at things that are coming with AI into the space, and we could go down a hole of what can we do with AI, but I don't think I want to go there just yet. Looking at taking AI, what it can do, but also making sure there's still a human touch involved in that. What are some things that people need to be aware of, or just an eye out to be able to, I guess when AI comes, AI plus EQ equals ROI. That's funny, Shreya. But when you look at that AI, right, mixing that with EQ, what are some things that somebody needs to be aware of?
I think you got the right idea, where it's like, it's possible to get the same information, but the human being thinks part of that information is important, and another human being thinks that's just a waste of time. Like when I talk about what we do, there's some people who dismiss what I teach as I call soft skills. Like you're just teaching soft skills. We do some of that kind of a thing. They don't realize that soft skills are one of the hardest skills to learn. Technical skills, I say I can teach a monkey. If I put a monkey in a room with the tools and the manuals, he'd probably figure out how to fix a gas valve or whatever over a period of time. But you're not going to teach them how to interact and communicate with people in an emotional way that gets them to have an impact, that they realize that, I guess the best way to say it is that what's never going to be there from AI is a sense of care, respect, and support. that I think the human being is always going to have to mention. I think anything we can do to strengthen the messages of care, client respect, and I'm not just talking about the external clients, but even the internal clients, like the people on your own company too, right? That I think if we can strengthen the message of our care, our respect, and our support for everyone we talk to, that's going to leverage our success. And no matter how much there is AI or how much other technology will be available, it will always make the human indispensable, I would say, because we're able to interpret that information and use it to our, in a strengthened one-on-one way that I could never see AI in my lifetime ever replacing that. I think as long as I'm alive, because I figure I got, maybe got 30 more years, see what happens. I'd be lucky. If I made 30 more years, I'd be very happy. I take it, heartbeat. But truthfully, I think in those 30 years, but then who knows? Technology is going so fast. I don't think anybody is going to be surpassing the human factor when it comes to in-home service, is what I would say. People could try to commoditize it as much as you want, and Google's going to hire out and use our companies as a tool to serve the clients. But truthfully, the high-end companies are never going to be taking on that kind of a service. And the only companies who are desperate to get customers are going to use that kind of a scenario, I think.
No, definitely. The reason why I brought this up in the first place is because I think it's really important to understand where business is going, because it's not, if you're not protecting the business that you're becoming and thinking about that, at the same time, looking at what it is that we can do today in order to move closer to that, I think you're failing as a business owner. And so diving into that customer experience piece, that's really what all of this boils down to from what you've said so far, Joe, what you echoed as well, Thaddeus, is that if we're not protecting that experience, and we're not protecting the relationship that we're building with the customer, then we're going to lose. And even when I think of from a marketing perspective, obviously as the marketing company, how do you protect yourself and insulate yourself as a business owner? Instead of someone searching in AC repair near me, they're searching for John Wayne Heating and Cooling in San Antonio. So they're looking for a specific company. They're not looking for service. So when it comes to the customer experience, what is it that you think most companies are failing at when it comes to delivering an exceptional customer service?
I think that's really a good question. I have been privy to experience that right now. Actually, I am searching for an HVAC system. I have a brand new house. And I bought a new house in Playa Vista, California. It has a system put in 2002. So it's up there, 20 years old. And I'm now looking for a new system. And I tried to move toward the more local contractors. And my first thing, I'll just give my thought process, mm-hmm. which is that I wanted somebody who could service it if I needed it. We have a lot of clients who I know who could probably do this, but they're out like 90 miles away from me. And I didn't want to put the burden on the company to have to service Uncle Joe, because I'm going to be a demanding customer. I can tell you right now that I'm going to be, hey, there's no cooling. Can you get here today? I'm not going to be like, yeah, just come next week sometime. We're cool. If we have one day without air conditioning, we probably move to the Courtyard by Marriott or something like that. That's how we are. So AC wimps. We're kind of, it's like most people are like, oh, I could go without it. I'm like, nope, I can't. So that's it. So bottom line is, I'd say I'm searching for it right now. Here's what I could tell you, the normal process I'm finding, which I'm sure a lot of people will find alarming. If you're listening to me and you do what I teach people to do, I was alarmed myself. I thought I was always overplaying how bad service was, until I called for 3 estimates on my own. Literally, everybody was like, all 3 of them, I said, okay, come here and look at everything. I want you to look at the whole, I tried to give them a clue. I want you to look at the whole system. I want to get that duct work. I want to look better control system. The lower level, we have a 3-story house. The lower level doesn't heat or cool at all. The air simply can't go from the attic where the equipment's at all the way down 3 stories. So I need to get probably a ductless or something down there. 2 of the companies said, no, I don't think you need that. I'm like, dude, I need it. It's no heat down here. It's like a mausoleum in the wintertime. It doesn't cool. It doesn't heat. He goes, with the new variable speed, it'll fix it. I'm like, dude, the ductwork is the ductwork. It's not going to fix it. Variable speed is not going to fix it. And they tried to argue with me. I'm just trying to buy more, right? I literally told all of them that, I told every single one of them, listen to this, that the first person who diagnoses the whole system, stays here today and gives me a price today, gets the job. I stopped shopping the second somebody would give me the price. 0 people were prepared to give me the price. Even when I said, can you give me the price now? No, I can't do it now. I got to talk to my boss, or I got to go back and work on it. I said, okay, when can you come back? I got to talk to my dispatcher and check my schedule. I said, could you do that now? Oh, she's busy right now. I can't get a hold of her. This is like the dysfunction of the company that somebody wants me to spend what I'm probably going to spend for that kind of a system. I want to replace the ductwork and everything. So I'm probably going to spend like $39,000, like at my mind. Something $35,000 to $39,000 I'm figuring for this thing. I couldn't even get anybody to sit down and make me a price. And of the three people, one person finally did email the price. Two people still haven't emailed the price in over 30 days. I just think that the average functional HVAC contractor way overestimates how they think their competition is doing. Everybody thinks that since I learned this, everybody must know it, right? But here's what I can tell you. Most people just want to replace the box. They don't want to look at the whole system. Most people don't have the prices or feel uncomfortable presenting prices. I'm not sure if they don't have it or if they just feel uncomfortable showing it to me because they're afraid that I might try to negotiate with them and they're going to feel uncomfortable in that negotiation. So they don't, they act like they don't have it or they just don't have it, right? And then I say, let's make an appointment. So those three things, right? Diagnose the whole system. Give me the price. If you can't give me the price, let's make an appointment to give me the price. Every single step was a fail. No, I had nobody look at the whole system, even when I told them to. Nobody would give me a price on the spot. Nobody would set an appointment if they couldn't give me a price. They couldn't commit to any dates to call me back or even come back a second time. I even told them, like, I said, dude, make an appointment with me because that'll be your money call. I told them, what's that? I said, that's the call where you come back and they give you money. I said, if I'm trying to give you money and you're not willing to make an appointment with me, what's going to happen when I'm not giving you money on a warranty call and I try to get an appointment? I said, this is your demonstration of your service that you're giving right now. I told all three people flat out, two people, I'll email it to you. I said, you're not going to make an appointment then? No, I said, don't bother emailing it. Maybe that's why they didn't send it. Okay, and they thought I was just crazy or something. But the bottom line is that I think that what's really bad out there is that what I assumed, because I've been teaching this for so long, is that everybody would get an estimate, look at the whole thing, ductwork, air quality, everything I'm looking for, control systems, give me a package or some premium mid-range economy solutions like I teach, and then give me a price on the spot with my wife. And I even made sure my wife was there. But can you imagine this? Like I didn't try to like get out of it. I'm like, Julie, you gotta come home. You gotta be here. I put it on a silver platter, right?
Yeah.
And I couldn't get somebody to do it with. I'm like, wow. I'm sure a lot of people listening to this right now, like, oh, I'll come out there, Uncle Joe from wherever. I come from New Jersey or whatever. I'll do it. The bottom line is that I'm pretty sure they would, but I'm looking for somebody local, right?
Yeah.
And you would think I'm in a pretty sophisticated place in Silicon Beach, which they call it, which is the high-tech corridor of Los Angeles. There's Google, YouTube, Microsoft, all right neighbors in our neighborhood there in Playa Vista. And you would think I'd be able to find somebody who had the technology to do that, right? So that's great. What I think.
Not even the technology, the competency, like it's
right.
Let's have Shreya come out.
Yeah, she would have sold me $50,000, but then I don't think she'd be able to install it. Unfortunately, I would buy it from her, no doubt about it. I already bought everything she's offering me already.
Right. Well, let's unpack this a little bit. So great, nobody wanted to give you a quote on the spot. Okay, they had to call so and so. They need to be a little bit more information, you know, etc. In terms of if this was a perfect scenario, a perfect storm, a perfect opportunity to sell Joe a $35,000 to $40,000 system, what would or should they have done in this particular instance to be able to win your business?
Great customer service, which is something that never will change, is to anticipate what might happen on the call before you go out there. So I think what I'm sensing is that people are just unprepared because I think they've been conditioned by so many bad customers. I think it's a never-ending circle. You want to call it a concentric circle? Customers have been conditioned by bad service providers to not expect the price. And so every time a service provider goes out there and had the price, they probably said, oh, I'm not going to buy anything today. So most people are not falling over backwards to give you a price anymore. So I think it's a self-defeating cycle. I think consumers had bad service, therefore weren't expecting to buy anything on the call. Service companies have picked up on that and said, don't expect to sell anything on today's call. Neither the customer or the service provider has any expectation to do anything. That's really which is really dysfunctional, right? We meet together and take an hour out of our life or 2 hours out of our life, and we leave with no system in place, no clear future, I call it, that's going to happen next. That to me is the, now, what would I expect to happen? I would expect somebody to say, when we book the call, hey, just so you know, we're going to come out there and look at the entire system, even set the agenda on the phone. Hey, so here's what we're going to send an HVAC specialist to your home, a solution specialist. We want to make sure everybody has equal access to the information. So will you and how many people own the home? Oh, my wife, Julie, and I. So will both of you be there to get equal access to the information? Because we believe in equal access. Now, Julie doesn't have to be there, but we got to make sure that everybody's available on Zoom or in real life to make sure that we have access to the information. Will everybody be available? We ask that everybody is available. What my wife doesn't want to do this? It's not even legal for us to install a system without all the homeowners signing off. So she would have to get information. It would be illegal for us to take the money from her without having her get the information. So we need to make sure she is available. She doesn't got to be on the site, but she has to be on phone or on Zoom to make sure she confirms that she's okay with the price and that she's able to sign off on that price before we continue. We can't book a call like that unless we do that type of thing, right? So I just say we're doing that. We're going to give you some premium mid-range economy options at every call we go on. We're going to ask you to say yes, no, or make another appointment at the end. So you can tell people what's going to happen on the call before you go there, right? And say, here's the experience we're going to provide. So I would anticipate that would be the best way to do it. And of course, after you've described that experience, then I would make sure we execute that experience, right? We do everything we said we're going to do. That kind of proves your character. What is character? Character is doing what you say you're going to do and honoring the commitment you gave people, right? So if I tell you I'm going to look at the whole system, tell you all the problems, make sure you and Julie are together to make sure we have equal access to the information. I'm then going to show you some premium mid-range economy choices. I'm going to make all those choices affordable so you can make sure you can afford it as well. We're going to give you the gift of affordability. And at the end of the call, we're going to ask you to either say yes, no, and if you need more time, we'll just make another appointment to bring it to a conclusion on that day. That's how we do things. So if you say you're going to do that in the front end, then everybody's bam. That's the only one who's ever said that to me, right? Maybe the zero contractors will be saying that on the phone. Now the service salesperson has something to guide him through executing what has been promised, because that's really what it is. Companies broken promises that were great. You guys are promising great things from brands and companies. What does the average company customer receive? And this is where I think the vulnerability of humans, go back to that again, they are vulnerable because a machine would not make a promise that it wouldn't deliver. But humans we're not perfect. We forget about those promises sometimes, or we say a promise a certain way and we don't really live up to that promise. I think sometimes that's where humans are vulnerable. I don't really think AI could be better than us. I just don't think that we're at our best most of the time. Make sense? Mm-hmm. I don't think we should give AI any more advantage than it already has. It's way smarter than us already, and it can execute things way faster than we can. So why give it more of a tip if we could just... I think AI, in a way, is forcing humanity to become more functional. It's a get more functional or die. That's why I look at it like that. Make sense?
I love it. From a business perspective, that's the only... It's the exact same thing. Get more functional or die. And Jesus, I can't believe what... In my mind, when I hear these stories of these technicians that aren't following through on this, is not their fault. This is the owner's fault of the business.
Yep.
Because they're not setting their team up to succeed. I remember selling Cutco knives. I learned back as a university student when they said, by the way, I'm not going to buy anything today. In my mind, all that meant was they were going to be buying something today.
Just not right the second, just a few minutes, like a few more minutes now.
It was them trying to convince themselves of not going to buy anything, but it didn't matter to me. It was water off the back. You just roll with it and keep going.
I think it's a test, Evan. I think they're testing you to see how passionate you are about the product and service you're doing. If you fall apart when they say that to you, oh, okay, then I'll just go away. That's like, yeah, thank God I didn't buy from that guy, right? But if you hang in there and say, Joe, I'm not here to sell something. I'm here to, you got to sell yourself on cutlery for the safety of your family and the food preparation for your family. And that's something that you have to decide whether that's worth it or not. I can't tell you that. All I can do is show you the products and services I have and let you decide for yourself. But don't decide until you see it. Yeah. What should we do? Yeah, let's go ahead and take a look at it. That's what I would do if I was doing that.
Funny. You say the safety thing, but one of the things I used to say in our sales presentation with Cutco is, and don't worry, when you cut yourself, and you will with your sharp knives, it's actually a super clean cut, and it actually heals a lot quicker than if you were to cut yourself with your shitty knives.
Right. No, but even when I was a comfort advisor, it's the same thing. By the way, I'm not here to sell you anything today. If you see something you like, you want to move forward with it, that's totally fine, but that's on you. My goal is just to provide the information, allow you to make an educated buying decision, and then we can help you move forward.
If you go back to it, like we're even suggesting, like in our phone scripts now, we're saying to make that promise or the call is free to say, so when you answer on a phone, you say, so how much does it cost to have a service guy come out to my house or whatever? Here's how we work in our company. We're going to send a qualified service tech to your house in a fully stocked truck. He's going to go over the entire system, both the ductwork, the equipment, and the problem you're having today. He's going to give you the full report, which includes some premium, mid-range, and economy solutions, or the call is free. So to get that, we just ask you to choose the one that's right for your family. So on the phone, that's the script we use. By doing it that way, we're taking the marketing, the operation of making premium mid-range economy options, making that promise. So either we do it or the call is free. So if you don't do it, the repair is free today if you don't do that. So I would say even the marketing message, imagine that. You always get where customer choice, you get premium mid-range economy choices or the call is free. That would be a great unique selling proposition I think you could put in there. So I think there's a lot of stuff that we're doing that's now, we have a lot of companies that use our services, and a lot of those companies have taken the message that we do, ask us about our peer motive service. So everybody has those talking points. When you ask about it, they know what it is, right? Or premium mid-range economy choices, or the call is free. Those are things that your marketing is making. In a way, the marketing and the people answering the phone are making the operation better, because they're like, yeah, I got to do this or else they're going to get a free service. I don't want to do that. So in a way, I think you got to connect. I think one of the things in the future is connecting the marketing to the people answering the phone, to the people in the field. So they're all singing from the same hymnal. I think that's something that is something that's an opportunity for everybody here to improve. I think there's a lot of people listening right now who say, yeah, I got to get that done right now. I got to get off my marketing message with the people answering the phone, so we're aware of what's happening there. Then we have the people in the field aware of what we're marketing and promising on that phone and the marketing. Make sense?
It's congruence built trust, right? And it needs to be the same all the way through. It needs to be the same message all the way through. If there's any variance within that, now all of a sudden the customer doesn't understand, and a confused mind always says no.
And you think about that congruency. I typed it out via email the other day. Your marketing company, you don't just set it and forget it. You just don't, hey, your marketing company is asking you questions. Get back to your marketing company and actually give them the information that they require. And obviously the marketing company should communicate back to you as well as the owner of the business, but it's a two-way street. It's a conversation. You don't just hire an employee and never talk to them again, right? That's the sort of investment that you need to make within your marketing company. Just don't think that they're going to have this message out there that doesn't quite meet your standards. Have those conversations, have those honest dialogues to be able to make sure that you can bring that congruency forward with everything that you say.
That's a good point. I think that's the part that we can, I think that's where technology does prompt us to make sure mm-hmm. that we can remind ourselves about what the higher purpose of the company is, right? So that's something mm-hmm. that I think that we sometimes forget. It can get lost in the translation. I think technology can be there as a reminder to, for instance, we do on Service Titan, the premium mid-range economy templates already. So when a guy starts a call, he's already got that wired in. We actually have the form on the diagnostic form where it makes you diagnose it a certain way, and you won't even get access to the sales information or the prices unless the diagnostic has been completed a certain way. So you can force, technology can force us to become better if we leverage it, because like Service Titan has that to where if you don't fill out that diagnostic form with a certain range of information you're looking for, you can't just throw garbage in there. You got to put it in the right way. If you don't put it in the right way, and now it's getting to the point where if you don't take the photographs and videos, you won't be able to get to the pricing. That's what technology can help us do, is to say, we're not going to let you do the next thing unless this thing was done right to begin with. So I think that's some of the things I think technology will improve on in the future. It's currently improving it right now, even.
I actually wanted to, it's funny that you mentioned technology, because I wanted to get into our random question generator, and then I actually wanted to circle back and bring up technology, and you brought it for me. I'm going to get into our random question generator, and then we're going to come back to technology, because there's a couple points that I wanted to make on some earlier things that you said. But of course, the random question generator is brought to you by On Purpose Media, where we are your local. Yes, I said we, that is us. We have a marketing company. We're not just HVAC Success Secrets Revealed. We're also On Purpose Media, where we help you out with all things home services, specifically HVAC marketing. But if you're ever questioning your marketing, guess what? onpurposemedia.ca/marketing-analysis. Submit that form. We'll give you a free marketing analysis and audit on your stuff to see what's on the go and what you could change. Whether you hire us or not, we'll still give you that information. Make sure you fill that form up, because guess what? Evan does all that work. The random question generator. All right, we have four different options here for you, Joe. I really hope you go with the one question that I'm wanting you to go with, because I think it's hilarious. So what question do you want me to read out? 1, 2, 3, or 4?
I'll take 2.
All right. It's actually the question that I was hoping that you're going to ask. So nice
here we
work.
Go. See what happens.
All right. Would you rather have a permanently silly voice or a permanently silly facial expression?
That's a very good question. I think I would have the permanently silly voice, because this would make it more memorable, and it'd be definitely easier to brand that. The look, I can make that look, but the silly voice is like, yeah, it's the guy with the funny voice, remember? If I had 10 people quoting on something, they're going to remember the guy with the silly voice, and He had that weird voice, remember? Something like Homer Simpson or something like that, or whatever it would be. Yeah.
So like Gilbert Gottfried type style voice, or Kermit the Frog style.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, something really high pitched, or really Kermit the Frog style. I think that would be definitely. May I say something? What? You sound just like Kermit. Oh, I didn't know that. It's like Mo from the Three Stooges.
There you go.
Why I oughta. Anyway. For the younger people, like, what's that?
Yeah. I was almost thinking like Elmer Fudge, you know, that Wascally Wabbit.
Man, that would be a good one.
Yeah.
That'd be good. Well, I think that would be, I take the funny voice. I'll take the funny voice over the silly expression. I already have enough silly expressions already, so I'd be able to change that for myself. Body language communicates probably more than our voice does, so I'd like to keep that for myself.
There you go. That makes sense. And most of your body language is unspoken, right? Was it 70% of the communication is body language? Or I think it's even higher.
I'm pretty sure all of your body language is unspoken.
I have a favorite saying. I would say that whenever somebody says something, you don't look like you just ate a turd. stop looking like you just ate a turd when people say that stuff to you. You got to have mind like water. Don't have any reaction at all. Just act like that's normal.
Poker face. Yeah, poker face. Yeah. All right, back to technology. I know you mentioned the Form and Service Titan. You covered some of those things and some extra things in there. But one thing that you had mentioned, and you're talking about having one of the family members available on Zoom, and that kind of sparked me a little bit, because we've heard some other guests on the show. Steve White was talking about they actually do some call-by-call management with Zoom. So they actually have the comfort advisor on Zoom with the tech in the home. But you mentioned it in a different way, in terms of having all of the members of the household present when they're going through things. So walk us through that. But I also want to know some of the other things which you think technology can help augment the business in the ways that people aren't leveraging it how they should be.
First of all, Steve White is a great guy from Peterman Services, right? And Peterman dove way into our program and with call-by-call management. And we are, it's one of our biggest clients of the year in 2023. And waves and waves of people from Peterman are taking this Zoom training and this call-by-call management from us. So we're definitely happy with their success. They basically added about 60% more to their average sale, and they doubled the closing rates by being able to pivot on Zoom. But let's put it this way, I think it's long overdue, Thad, because it's always been a fact that people live out of state and they own a house in a different state. So for the very minimum, shouldn't we be able to take our information and present it via Zoom to some guy who's in New York and you have a house in Canada or whatever, that somebody could present the solution to that person and they would have equal access to that information again? They'd be able to get the same presentation or actually better presentation, because if you're in a home, it's hard to see on the iPad. But if you've got on my phone, I see your prices. That's actually a more clearer presentation, I think it would be. So I think that's something that it's overdue. I think for the very minimum, you could start with landlord situations, that all landlords who aren't going to be there should all have a Zoom link to present that as a very starting point. From there, I'd say if you only have one person in the house, just ask if the other person could get their email so we could give them a link via Zoom so they could take 10 minutes away from whatever they're doing and enjoy the presentation we're going to give them. You might have one homeowner there and the other one at work or whatnot type of thing, so that could be there. And then now call by call, which is really the next phase, which is that pretty much all the presentations now are Zoom. Instead of saying one gets it and one doesn't, the salesperson stays at the office. We send a service guy out there and the service guy uses his iPad, and all the options for replacement are given via Zoom now. So most of the major companies are pivoting away from people. There's one company I know that you mentioned their name already, that they used to have a sales car or sales truck for every salesperson. Now they've got 60 salespeople with only 8 trucks or vehicles, because everybody's in a call center giving presentations with the service teams. And even the service guys are going out there doing the estimates first, making the connection with the customer, and then introducing them to the solution, to the quality control specialist who has the prices ready to go, and he will sell the job like that. And most of the customers are like pretty floored by that technology, that wow, so you got somebody, your boss is back at the office and he's got the photographs and videos and he learned about our family and that's how he made this personal presentation. When you start thinking about from a consumer perspective, it's pretty flooring compared to what you normally, like I mentioned, what you normally get right earlier in the call. Now you're going to get this high technology dude with all the prices ready to go. And it's customized and relevant with videos and photographs to show exactly what we're going to fix and what we're going to do. That's really it. So the idea is to give the customer the best experience possible. And I think that's now come full circle where not, I can imagine a day where pretty much everything will be via phone or video when you're giving a presentation to things. Yeah, I think it's a hybrid, right? Because people were seeking to do things like, hey, go to my website and buy a furnace or AC, which I don't think is realistic because there's ductwork issues, variables, ductwork, power, the control system, and things that are just the house has different quirks that you're going to need to see to be able to make sure it's sized right, to make sure that the airflow is going to be right and things like that. The ductwork is done right. That's the variable that's missing. You can't just put a box into somebody's house and today, like a 2023 box into a 1958 ductwork system and think it's going to work. Mm-hmm. So that's not going to work, I don't think. But I think what is going to be needed is that this technology makes an expert, like you might have one expert in your company who knows airflow, ductwork, drain, he knows everything, but he can be now on 12 or 15 calls today through technology. Because before he could only go to two calls, only two customers out of your whole database got this experience. Now you got one guy can probably reach 12 to 15 customers with the technicians he's with, and it gives the customer a better, superior experience, I think. That's what I believe.
I'm curious, would you recommend that a company then would prioritize calls to certain comfort advisors that are sitting in the office, or how would you go about like organizing that?
Let's put it this way. I had the company I was talking about was in Texas, and I first back in the, but I mentioned this before the pandemic because I was already working on this since 2012. We're always doing remote presentation or kind of monitoring people call by call. We were doing that. But I said, now we're pivoting to where we're actually making a presentation via Zoom. I mentioned it in 2019 to them in September 2019. After the pandemic hit, they called me in April and said, hey, remember how we said people in Texas aren't going to want that? They want it now. So how can we learn this? And I'm driving to Idaho to another company, Express Services. As I was driving, I gave them 3 hours of my time. And thank God I was bored driving to Idaho on Highway 5 here in California. I gave them 3 hours of my time doing a seminar while I'm driving to Idaho. And from that seminar, they said all 11 comfort advisors, and they all said, Joe, you don't understand. People in Texas aren't going to want to see this technology. That's how we like real people in our house and things like that. And I got to be there in the house to make sure people see who I am and get the emotional impact. And I said, the guy's name was Chris. I said, Chris, why don't we do this? Leave it to the customer to decide what they want. So the technician goes out to the house, and then you have the options ready to go for the replacement. He's got the options ready to go for repair. And the technician says, hey, I got two ways of doing this. I can fix it, but it is a 20-year-old system. Or I got Chris on the line right now, who's my customer, my quality control specialist. He's got the options for replacement ready to go. And here's the key thing. The replacement options are less money than the repair options, because you're not going to take the money out of your pocket. We're going to provide the option to replace the equipment, and we're going to give you a bridge loan to give you the money as well as the equipment to get that done. Should I tell Chris to go away, or do you want Chris to come out tonight? What should we do? And zero people said, have Chris come tonight. Everybody said, do it now. If you got it ready now, let's do it now. Mm-hmm. So the do it now philosophy, which is something I've always believed in, as one of my talking points is do it now or the competition will, has now come full circle where this is now making it possible, right? Where an expert has all the solutions ready to go. You're not putting the burden onto the service guy to come up with both service repairs and replacement, because that would take probably 4 hours of his time to do that. So now you're going to say, you do the repair. Chris will be back at the office doing the replacements. But so at the same time you go to the repair, the key thing is this. If you have the replacement options ready to go at the same time the repairs are ready to go, and you tell the customer, I got both things available right now, what should we do? That's the first choice. And here's what we found. 62% of the people say, I might as well at least look at the replacement because it's available. The magic is the price is available right now. It's not like he came up with customized solutions. So that's the thing that is impactful, that these two people working together as a team, one comfort advisor working with as many as five service techs doing the same thing with five people, is going to result in a single day anywhere from 8 to 16 presentations of equipment. And what you're going to find is about 70 to 80% of those people are going to go forward, because you got a technology that if they called 15 other people, zero people will be doing it that way. Makes sense. It'd be I call blue ocean, where you've got a chance to get in front of all the other companies, something that's different that nobody else is doing. Makes sense?
You look at what Devin Harrison is saying, actually, on Evan's thread. For some reason, it's not popular in our comments, but they had a lot of the same objections from the from their text. Now the actual response from the customer is, this is great. So much easier. This, you're creating an efficiency for the customer, right? And when you do that, this almost goes right back to that very opening point you said, human touch, right? Now you're making it easier for them. They don't have to set out another time for somebody to come back. They don't have to set out more time out of their schedule for this. They don't have to go do other aspects of it. No, it's done right then and there, right? You've saved them time to be able to go spend with their family by bringing technology into the equation.
Yeah. If you wanted to see a theme park of this, of what I teach, go to Peterman, go call Devin Murphy and ask him for a tour of Peterman. They'll show you what the theme park of Uncle Joe looks like when you go there. That company lives, eats, and breathes it now. And I give Chad Peterman a lot of credit because he was already doing great. And now he's even doing greater. That's what I love about people like that. So some companies who have to wait till they're desperate to hire me. And there's other companies who are saying, we're not desperate. We're doing good, but we want to do even better. So that's really why I give Peterman a lot of the credit. And companies like John Wayne and people like that, same thing. They're already doing good, but they're willing to invest more in their team because they realize that we got to stay just a little bit ahead of our competition. But I would tell you, I'd submit that Peterman is not just a little bit ahead of the people in Indianapolis. And they're way ahead of the average company in that area. Makes sense?
And when you're already a nine-figure company and you're trying to double your business already, like that's a massive growth plan.
Yeah. It's still a privately owned company. It's probably the last of the privately owned companies who have scaled that big using customer, what do you call it, investment rather than using private equity and giving up part of your company. They're keeping 100% of their company, but they're also getting the client to make that investment in their future by buying multiple year service agreements, multiple year warranties, consumables that have been sold today for the future. These are things that the client is willing to invest in, showing people that brand has trust. Because really, what is trust? People buying future services from you today, trusting that you're going to honor that promise to be there when they invest that money today for tomorrow's service. Does that make sense? Not just one service agreement, but 12 years of service agreement. Not just one filter, but 12 years of filters, pads, and bulbs that they trust you're going to be there to deliver all that. That says a lot about that company when the community is buying an average of 7 years of service in the future every time they sell something. Make sense? Mm-hmm. That's where most of the revenue is coming from, is not just what they were already doing great service today. What we think we added to Peterman was sell the future services that people are going to need, to anticipate they're going to need that stuff. Give them a chance to buy that too. And that's really what they did. I think the technology made it like a snap, and they took to it like a duck to water, and definitely give them all the credit because I can teach this stuff, but a lot of people don't take action on it, but they did for sure.
So I got two questions here. One, I just want to get clarity on the prioritization of calls. So if you've got a team of 15 techs, you've got three advisors now that are on the phone working with five technicians each. If there's a technician who's on a call, are they dedicated to those five people? Or if you have one advisor that's got an average ticket that's $3,000 higher than the next person, they're better at communicating, they're better at solving problems, and there's a customer where they've got six systems at their house, would you rather prioritize them going to that call? Or would you still have them stick to the five people that they're assigned to?
First question first, yes. The one leader is assigned to five service technicians, and you are going to watch to make sure their prices are correct for the service repairs. So they're going to be quality control to make sure that the diagnostic of the repair was done right, and to make sure the repair option sheets were created. And then the guy in the field is also going to be your quality control person, make sure that your solutions that are going to fix the replacement is right. So in a way, there's nothing sweeter. I just got a chill on my spine thinking about it. Both people on the team holding each other accountable in a way. Does that make sense? Where it's not just the leader holding his guy in the field accountable, but the guy in the field saying, hey, you forgot something when you presented this replacement. We can make sure both people look at each other's presentation to make sure they're good. I mean, but you have two people collaborating on this. Now the customer has a chance at the perfect presentation for repair and the perfect for the replacement. So the truth is that when it comes to prioritization, we have eight factors to prioritize calls. Some of them are customer loyalty and history. If somebody buys a service agreement before we even come out there for $250, that's obviously better. Both people have a no air conditioning, it's not working, it's not no cooling, that's better than somebody who has cooling. Both people are home is better. No home warranty is better, right? People getting pre-approved for financing is better. So things like that. There's different ways to prioritize a call. Seriously, here's one thing that people don't realize: how old the equipment is. has no factor. It's ironic. Most people think, oh, let's send them to the old equipment. But guys, if somebody's got 50-year-old equipment and they've been living in this house for 50 years, they're going to hang on to that with their cold, dead hands. They're not going to release that equipment, right? It's like, it doesn't make a difference how old the equipment is. If somebody, right. So there's people who have cracked heat exchangers that operate those for 3 years and it's okay. I just open the windows or whatever, right? So there's certain people that are that's just the way they are. They're just not going to buy. So I don't think anything has to do with the age of the equipment or how old the people are and things like the age is not anything to do with it. However, I think there are a lot of factors to prioritize calls. What I would do is I would give the best call to the highest performing team because I want to make sure that the customer who is in most dire need, if you came to an emergency room and you're like, oh my God, his arm is severed. Let's get the best surgeon we can get here to help this guy because make sure we can cauterize the wound or whatever we're going to do. So I want to make sure I get the best surgeon for the most dire and severe wound if I was a doctor. And I want to do the same thing for our client. I want to make sure the client gets the best, the client who has the highest need gets the best person to make sure that they have the most qualified person in front of them, whoever has the best results. Not just financial results, but a combination of financial and customer experience results, like reviews and all that stuff. It's all part of it. I don't just put all my, listen, I wouldn't be a slave to just the financial results because I will fire somebody who gets financial results but is not following the process because that person is a cancer to the team. I don't care. That's how you know a team like Peterman is on track. They will let you go even if you sell stuff, doesn't make a difference. You got to sell it away. The values of the company align. If you don't do it the way the company can stand behind it, nobody wants to have a slimy sales guy out there promising stuff we're not delivering. No. I think, but yet some people do fall into that trap. They need to make payroll. And so they start letting the guy do what he wants to do out there in the field and not following the company value system. But that's how companies grow, is by having a value system, making sure all the employees honor that value system. And then we can all stand behind everything that people do. Make sense?
And it's one of the hardest decisions you have to make as a business owner, to let go of a top person. It doesn't matter if they're on the front end staff side, leadership side, they're the janitor, or they're your top salesperson. To let the top person go is always difficult, but if they're a cancer to the organization, you'll never make a decision that is going to impact culture more than by letting them go.
Mm-hmm. I would say it's time to go part ways when you lose 100% trust that the employee is going to execute the way the company has designed it. We've designed a certain experience for our clients, and that's what we want done. If people say, I got my own way of doing things, quote unquote, and so that might have been nice at the last company, but at this one, we do things the way the team does it together. Can you play within the team? Kind of, no, I just do it my own way. Yeah, I don't even use ServiceTitan. I just write it on a matchbook or whatever.
Team player. Good question to ask. Are you a selfless team player or not?
That'd be nice to ask it, but everybody will say yes to that. What you really see is the action. So I call it ownership, which people say that's the attitude we have, but the willingness, which will they actually do what we're saying, what they say they're going to do?
Correct.
That's where that character comes into place. And I think there's three things for every employee. Character, that you commit to something we're doing and you do it. That's number one. Competence means that you learn it so that if I start a sentence, you could finish it, right? That the company has a way of doing things. If we start a sentence, you could finish what the company's going to say. And number three, communication, that we're communicate both the things that are needed, things we can't do with customers, things we can do with customers, is boundaries we have to have. Without those boundaries, our healthy boundaries, a company cannot grow. It's going to stunt the growth of the company because we're promising things we can't deliver. We have to go back and handle customer concerns. We get bad reviews. We got to start buying our way out of bad reviews and things like that. That's the thing. That's what's astounding about like NextGen and Peterman and Victor's company, Absolute, is that they don't just get these things, but they get the great reviews too. That tells you something. It tells you that it's, in a way, an honorable way to service people, that we're not doing it in a slimy fashion, because the reviews are like the ultimate correction technique that clients have to alert us that we have a gap in our company.
Mm-hmm. Love it. A saying that I've always loved is, what you do speaks so loudly, I can't hear what you say.
That's a good point there. I think I agree with that 100%.
That just reminds me of Patrick Waugh going, and back in the NHL days where somebody was beaking him, was like, sorry, I can't hear you with my Stanley Cup rings in my ear.
Yeah.
I was a Chicago Blackhawks fan. I can only say that in the 2000s. That's when we thought we were vulnerable and possible to beat. Of course, back when, you guys, where are you guys located?
I'm in Calgary. But I'm an Oilers fan, so it was a tough series loss. Right, yeah. It was a tough series loss.
Back in the day, everybody was a fan of Messier and Gretzky and those guys. That was like, our Blackhawks weren't that great back then, so I joined. Because once we were out of the playoffs, I always went for Oilers all the time. That's my team sucks again now, but...
Hey, you just got Connor Bedard or whatever his last
number
name
one
is.
Draft pick of the whole draft, right?
They got coming out of Regina.
Lucked into that
city that rhymes with fun.
Is that a place? Is that a place or a section? Is it an organ?
Yeah, no, that's where I'm from.
Is that the city that rhymes with fun? It is a saying that us folks in Saskatchewan and Alberta have is that it is the city that rhymes with fun. So there actually is a place called Dildo, Saskatchewan as well. So fun fact.
I could believe that.
Yeah. So
I do believe that.
Last question on the Zoom calls and things like that. At what point do you recommend that a company implement something like that? How many team members do they need to have in order to do that?
If you're fortunate enough to be a one-man company with two, you hire your first employee, that's when I would start. Because wouldn't it be cool? Like you have a new guy you're bringing in, you teach him for 2 weeks in the truck, and you say, okay, you're going to go on calls and I'm going to monitor. I'll have the replacement ready to go and you have the repairs ready to go. I'm going to monitor your repairs are correct and you're going to monitor my stuff and we're going to do that lead turnover right now. So I think if you're fortunate enough to do it when you're a startup even, that's when it should be done. If you've got five service technicians and two sales guy, well, definitely you have that. You already have enough people to do this. So I would say do it in a prototype fashion though, no matter how... Even Peterman, they came out here in Los Angeles. And I said, you want us to come up? And he goes, no, I don't want to come to Indianapolis because we don't want to get poisoned by what's happening out here. We want to come to Los Angeles so we can get away from that so we can learn it. So they learned it the right way. Devin came out here with one guy. That one guy learned it at the class. He sold $43,000 while he was at the class doing it. So we do the first day we train people. The second day we then get them on the team and we do it from here. I'm actually whispering in their ear in Los Angeles. The third day, I'm whispering a little bit harder in their ear, and I got five people. So he sold $43,000 in the 2 days he was selling while he was here in Los Angeles. They went back and implemented it with the rest of the team. They brought people back here in waves of people and just kept doing it. But they started out with the one person, which I think is good no matter how big the company is, to say, let's prototype one-on-one to make sure we can manage this with one person first, and then maybe bring on two people, one to two, one to three. We found that about the maximum that could be really effective is 1 to 5. If everybody's really trained well, if the team is amazingly trained, maybe as many as 7 could be done. Because you got to be ready to go with the presentation any given time with up to 7 people. So only one person can have that ready to go. Make sense? And you also got to be making sure the service people are doing their job right with the right prices and stuff like that. And the diagnosis is right too. And by the way, even before the service guy gets to the house, they go on Zillow and they do a research on the house and say, let me get about the right size so I can get an option sheet ready to go. And then they're ready to present it. And then the service guy gets there and modifies a little bit like that. So I think just one-on-one in the short, long answer to a short question was a good way to start.
Love it. Yeah. Start things the right way.
Get it down like anything. Walk through it in a small fashion and then expand that prototype. And pretty soon it's just a normal way of doing business. Nobody would have ever dreamed that I'd be teaching. I never thought 5 years ago I would be teaching this 100%. Like the number one thing we teach is it's really there. That's really the biggest thing that makes us different is the full training from the time you teach the service guys, the sales guys how to do their thing. Now we bring both teams together to do that call-by-call management. It's really grown. Our company has grown by 5 times the amount too because of that.
Love it.
Sure. Cool. We have one question from a user, and that is, what are your thoughts regarding online pricing for transparency for systems? That is actually John Gonzalez, by the way, down in Austin, Texas.
Again, it's like a tricky fashion because if we're talking about going online and then finding a price on your website, that would be, I think what's going to happen here, I think what I've seen so far in this regard is, you know, go out and fill out this form and make sure you're going through all the questions you're going to ask. And then it comes up with a kind of like a monthly payment, which I think that seems like it's okay. So what I wouldn't do, John, is I would not give the total amount because number one, that's not going to be accurate. And a monthly payment, if it isn't, it'll still be inaccurate, but at least it'll be closer. Like the difference between $397 a month and $450 a month, like it might actually cost $450 a month. And by the way, that can all be manipulated by the amount of years on the payments, right? Mm-hmm. And also the amount of interest rate on the payment. So It's easier to promise like a monthly payment when it comes to that and then say, for more information, let's book a call to confirm all these findings are correct. So I think that's kind of the way I would do it. I would do it on a month. I would not do it with a full price because you're going to scare the bejesus out of somebody. Yep. Or you're going to bait and switch it like, hey, it's going to be 8,000 for this system. And then you get out there, hang on, it's 40,000 for the system. And that's going to be too much of a sticker shock. Like, what? You just told me. It's like that bait and switch that car dealers do. Hey, brand new Chevy for $8,000. And you get out there and there's no cars there on the lot, less than 20,000. You're like, I'm here. I might as well get a car anyway. But I don't like the bait and switch element of it because that doesn't really match up with the character thing I'm concerned about. I'd say whatever we're doing, if you promise a payment, we'll try to get as close as possible. Make sure we have a disclaimer on that payment that probably not going to be. But I think it's cool to get people to interact. I think what we're getting from that, though, John, is that when people go through that process, in a way, they're committing to getting equipment now. It is good in one element because they're making go through how big the house is. You want a furnace and AC. You're informing them that air quality is available. Do you want air quality or not air quality? What kind of thermostat do you want? So by going through all those questions, each question creates another level of commitment, I think, which is good. I think when it gets to the price part of it, though, I would definitely say restrict yourself to a monthly payment. This way it can come somewhere close to that. And even if you overdid a little bit, it would be, customers could be like, $450 a month, huh? And then let's say you came out there and it was like $397 a month. So I would probably even go a little higher on the monthly payment than you thought it was going to be and then come in under it so people are pleasantly surprised. Oh, yeah, we were ready to go at $497 a month. But geez, he came in at $325 a month or whatever. That's good. He's a no-brainer. So I think you can use that contrast in your pricing with the monthly payment. And I would say this one thing, guys, in today's world, if you're not, and by the way, zero people, the guy who did send me a thing, sent me an estimate with the full price. I asked him about the payment programs and not that I need one, but to see if he had one or anything like that. He said, no, we don't do that. So basically zero people had that too. So today's world, you have to surrender to the monthly payment being the primary way to get prices. That's the primary way to get prices.
I got two thoughts on that. One, take a page from the auto industry, right? Whenever you see advertisements out there, they go as low as whatever price, bi-monthly or monthly or whatever. Now they have
Now it's weekly.
Now it's weekly, right? So they have the disclaimer on the bottom that says based off of mid-range model, this color, this package, this trim, yada yada yada, right?
On approved credit.
And so they have all the disclaimer in there. Now we don't need to go to that length for the industry that we're in, but if you do the as low as your moniker, right, now you give yourself the out when you're in there that if it does become higher, okay, well, as low as this was the base model sort of thing, now we have all these extra things. If you want to get as low as, here's the options for that as one potential spinoff. We don't need to go into the deep dive on that. And now I forgot the second point that I was going to go on, but
I love what ProSkills did in Arizona. And this was Travis Ringy, who was a guest on our show. On their page, they had a complete description as to what that price included. We're not moving the ductwork, where it's a quick change out. Everything's set up correctly. We're replacing it for the same size system. It's exactly this. It's exactly that. There isn't airflow issues. There isn't insulation issues. You don't have a bunch of south-facing windows. Things like that. Mm-hmm. Now you've got an accurate price on there. If you vary from that price, it doesn't follow those parameters. So of course the price is going
to
change.
And you probably could put that price up there when you get to the house if it's the right size and say that's our bottom option. Like correct. This way would be the lowest option. Correct. To change the ductwork and the rest of it would be more. Just give them the premium option first, which includes ductwork and sealing it and everything like that. The bottom option is the one you saw online right here. So you probably could come close to honoring that in some way. So you're not moving the deck around too much. Yeah, we could put the equipment in, but your ductwork's leaking and things like that. Makes sense.
I remember my thought, and I don't remember the exact number, but I remember one of our guests had mentioned that 70% of all HVAC install systems are financed, roughly, give or take, obviously depending on the company. So to my point of the guy who says, oh, we don't do that, if you're listening to this and you do not have a financing partner or option available and you do not present it on that, fix that shit now. There are lots of other financing providers out there. In fact, I know somebody whose fees are generally a lot lower and there's different ways that they can spin it. So reach out. I'll introduce you guys. It's an easy conversation. But make sure you add that into your repertoire because you are missing shit in your business just by not having it in there based on that statistic alone.
I agree.
Yep. So
miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
All right. If you think Joe has some great knowledge and you want to learn a little bit more about what he dropped on the show today. And by the way, Joe, I really appreciate when you are on the show because A lot of times people can come on a podcast and they can sell, but you're about value first. And so I really appreciate it about you and what you bring to the industry. In fact, a lot of the stuff that you post within our Facebook group, my turn to gush about you because you did that about us in the beginning. Just providing that upfront value to individuals as much as humanly possible, because they're going to take that value. They're going to find the answers out anyways. You might as well be the one that's going to give that value. You take 100 people in the room, 5 people are going to find that value. The other 5% aren't going to go do anything with it. And maybe not quite actual numbers, but I do appreciate you and what you bring to the industry and sharing all the knowledge that you've gained over the years and what you guys are doing. It speaks testaments to what you guys have on the go at Service MVP. So thank you for that. And of course, if you do want to reach out to them, servicemvp.com. That does, by the way, Joe, in case you're wondering, forward to that link that we had earlier. I tested that out. So servicemvp.com gets you there. If you have any questions for him, joe@servicemvp.com. And of course, if you're listening to this on Facebook, hit them up, facebook.com/servicemvp. They're also on Twitter. They're also on TikTok. I'm sure they're on Instagram too, but those are 3 big ones. But before we go, Joe, we have one final question here for you.
Uh-oh.
And that is, what is one question that you wish people would ask you more, but don't?
Oh, my goodness. That's a good one. You know, I was ready, and then all of a sudden I forgot it all because you guys got me going on something else. I think we took my Rock Band thing away. Thanks for saying that one. But I'd say, the question I wish people would ask me more about is how much profit do I think people should make? I think that's a big one. I think people assume that profit should be made, but I don't think they realize that the minimum net profit should be 20%, because there's 5% chaos, 5% things that we should be planning for replacing that we didn't plan on, 5% new technology we didn't know, even know about that's going to be needed, and then 5% for capital improvement. So until the company makes a 20% net profit, you're not even making you can't stack money into an account, which explains why your accountant says you made money, but you have no money in your account, because the money that you thought you made is being reinvested back into business in ways that you had no choice to do. And really, that's where I say, so I think that's probably the biggest thing, is that people don't understand profit and how hard it is to get there. It takes courage to make profit, which means that some of the people who are really nice people aren't going to get there with us. They're just not suited to follow the process and have the character, competence, and communication to make it there. But that's what I love. I'd love to talk about that part, truthfully. That when I do talk about it, I definitely have a lot of passion behind it, because I have suffered through when I didn't make profit when I was younger. I definitely have a passion to make sure people do that now. And I always say to do that, like that, like you said, I always want to make sure that people, when they buy from us, that they've already gotten value and that they feel like they owe me something. I never want to have anybody, 0 people in Service MVP who use us, who feel like I haven't provided enough value for them. Make sense? There's 0 bad reviews, because we always over deliver and I always make sure people already made money before they bought from us. And that's what we look at. So when people say we can't afford Service MVP, I always say, dude, we're trying to give you money. I don't know what you're talking about. It's not the kind of thing where we got to buy from us. You got to sell yourself on making more money. If you're willing to do that, then we're here to help you. That's a long answer to a short question, Thad. But
hey, look, that whole topic itself could probably be half a show, right? Mm-hmm. To really dive into the nitty gritty on it. And that's something that I would really love to explore more, coming up to an hour and 15 minutes. Might be tough to condense that down, because again, you are right. I think about a story that, and I learned this when I was young, and I was in the industry that I'm not allowed to name on our podcast anymore.
It's been a while. You can say it.
Okay. The passenger elevator industry. You've been in a couple shows without mentioning Tony Robbins. So I feel like I can mention it. When I was in the passenger elevator industry, I was young, I was 25, and we were pricing things at 55% gross margin. And my thought was, okay, why are we pricing things? And there was other, it was probably even more closer to like 7% gross margin on it, and not the 55, like our sheet said, because of the labor rates, et cetera, and what we actually paid the guys and what we were charging for the billable rates inside the quoting. And I'm like, I couldn't get it through my mind. I'm like, that's fucking absurd. Like, why are we charging so much money? Like, we're raping these people. We're taking advantage of them. We're betting on that. Like, everything that came to my mind. And then the boss sat down and says, no, let me show you why. And we went through the other lines of the department. Like, I was in the department I was in was the demand department. We were just, it was fun things, right? There was new business, there was modernizations. And so we went through everything in terms of the overhead of the business. He's like, guess what? When we build in your product that you're selling, this other product, new construction, the other department, modernization, plus all of our overhead, here's our financial lines, right? Here's what we're looking at in terms of the overall business. We're actually shooting for a 5% net. And they were in a different scale. You're talking hundreds of millions of dollars, billions of dollars, right? And so their scale was a lot different. But when he showed that, and now he shows in the numbers that go in behind it, is a big thing. So I think the part of A, knowing your numbers, but B, when you have your pricing, don't be scared to be transparent with your team. And you don't have to show exact numbers of your financial statement, but if you show percentage breakdowns, because they might think, hey, you're charging $20,000 for this? Holy fuck, why? Show them some of the back end stuff where you actually put in some of those expenditures that you have within your business. Now you're going to have a transparent thing, total team buy-in.
I always say when you're an employee, whatever you think something costs your boss, triple it and add 150 and you'll probably be pretty close. That's where it is. Because it's probably, they're probably paying way more than you think they are. Everybody thinks they get a good deal on things. Nobody's getting a good deal on it. Because when you're running a business, there is no such thing as a good deal. Everything is, it's needed and everything costs more. Like when you see Victor with the profit, the event he's doing in Austin, I mean, everything's, he's making a crap. Let me tell you something. He is going into debt in that. To do that kind of seminar, to do in Vegas like he did in Vegas when we were there, that he put his own skin in the game. It's an investment in his marketing to get people to see him. And he probably did make the investment long-term back from it. But that event was not, anytime you do a live event, something like that, you realize how much it costs. Like even when we do live events for Total Immersion, just the food and the hotel and everything, is in promising the rooms. It's we start at 20,000, no matter how big the event is. Two people show up, we still got to pay 20,000. Make sense? So that's just interesting how it works. So it's a lot of big commitment to do all that stuff. But thanks so much for inviting me here, guys. And definitely servicemvp.com, here to help you guys if you need it. I'd definitely be here to help anytime anybody needs that.
Awesome. Appreciate you taking the time, Joe.
See you in Austin, bud.
Yeah. And until next time, cheers.
Joe, thank you so much, my friend, for coming on this week. So much value that was delivered in this episode. I know we try to keep them to 45 minutes, but that was a hard one to wrap up because it was just a great conversation with a lot of value.
We almost doubled that itself, right? And just, you know, the things that he says, it so much sense, right? I still can't get over that he had three companies come out and two of them just didn't send him a price. And one of them emailed him the price later and was just the full value of the price. Like, what in the actual fuck?
Yeah. Well, and for us, like, I mean, we're two guys that came up from being in direct sales and training, hiring, growing a sales team beyond that. So fucking frustrating to hear that. Absolutely drives me nuts. And like, as a comfort advisor, we gave quotes at the call, period, end of story. I had a full spreadsheet back then. Like, we weren't on Titan or Sarah or anything like that. It was a spreadsheet and you just fill out the information and it told you what the different levels of equipment were that you can quote on, good, better, best. And away we went. God, it's so frustrating. The idea of how do you better your team? How do you better your marketing? Reverse engineer your shit.
Right. Well, even the other part too is that even as a marketing company, you know, the frustration would be like, okay, what if we sent that lead, you know, to there and you just fucked up on that, right? You didn't do anything. Like, it's just, but the other part too that I really liked is the advent of technology and really going deep on that whole call by call, adding in Zoom into it, doing the presentation, having decision maker there. And if not, bringing the decision maker on Zoom. Like, look, if one thing that, you know, the pandemic has really brought forward is the ability to do online things and it be normalized within society. You know, you tried to maybe do this 5 years ago and in 2018, you might have had a little bit of a pushback, although FaceTime was a thing, right? So you could still do FaceTime back then. But, you know, that is just such a smart way to augment technology into efficiency within the business. And look, if you can, what Peterman is doing, did they increase their average ticket size by 60% and double their closing rate with the same amount of calls? And one could argue you could probably then even run more calls because Right. Because now it's a different frame. So you can add more calls onto the board while increasing those metrics. Why wouldn't you be leveraging technology in your business?
Yeah, the efficiency that you can run now on a tech turnover call is just phenomenal. The speed at which you can hop through those calls, so much better. It saves the client time. Like, it's just a win across the board. And that's something that you know, I'm always a big proponent of, is how do we create win-win-win scenarios where the customer wins on the end, the homeowner, right? You win as your business, the marketing company wins on our side. it's about creating win-win-win scenarios across the board.
One thing that I actually didn't get into, but I wrote down, is the idea of prep. And, you know, well, I guess he kind of got into that because he talked about prepping individuals in advance. You know, thinking about it this way, and I'm going through this with our toddler right now, because toddler brains, they need to be prepared in advance for what's going to be happening. And then they're less prone to meltdowns when you prep them in advance of, hey, what's going to happen? You're like, in the toddler example, hey, in 5 minutes, we're going to go out for bath time. Okay. Okay. And then in 2 minutes, and it could be 10 minutes down the road, they don't have a concept of time, but 2 minutes, we're going to go for bath time. Okay. And then 1 minute, and then, okay, we're going to bath time. Okay. And they just happily go along. Right. So thinking about that in terms of explaining it to a toddler, and I know, you know, we've talked about a lot of things, explaining things to a fifth grader, taking that nuanced approach to be able to really simplify it down to the very basics into what to expect. Now somebody is prepped. So when you come in there, they're not going to have any hidden surprises. There's no ulterior motive, no agendas underneath it. They're like, oh, okay, well, they told me up front that they're going to tell me, you know, this could be a potential option. Now your closing rate is going to go even higher too.
Yep. 100%.
Yep.
But we want to hear from you. As the listeners, so many nuggets from this episode. What were your favorite nuggets from the episode? Hit us up at info@onpurposemedia.ca. Or, of course, you can text us at 719-824-1377. Reach out to us anytime. We want to hear from you, your favorite nuggets from the episode. And, of course, if you want to be like John and get your questions answered during the episode, tune into the live episodes. You can join our Facebook group, facebook.com/group/HVAC revealed, or of course, friend us on Facebook and of course on YouTube, youtube.com/HVAC revealed. Tune in next week for another great guest. We're going to be diving into outbound calling and the advantages of that next week. See you then. Cheers.
Well, that's a wrap on another episode of HVAC Success Secrets Revealed. Before you go, two quick things. First off, join our Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/HVAC revealed. The other thing, if you took one tiny bit of information out of this show, no matter how big, no matter how small, all we ask is for you to introduce this to one person in your contacts list. That's it. That's all. One person. So they too can unleash the ultimate HVAC business. Until next time. Cheers.